Blog Talk Radio. Shauna Ava, and you are listening to Hard On Radio. Welcome, everyone. I am really excited about my guest. I'm always excited about my guest. This one is especially exciting, though, and it's personal. I actually have my mom in the house. I got my mom in the house. So if you're hearing double, I have my mama here. So no big deal. She's actually the reason that I was raised in the metaphysics and open spiritually, and really got a taste of all of these delicious type of thought forms and existential thinking and all of this openness. I really credit to her. So Sheila Nee, thank you so much for being here tonight, aka Mom.
Well, of course, thank you for inviting me.
Please, you are begging me to be on the show. No, I'm just I'm just kidding. I was begging her. I really was. So let's take our first few breaths and get grounded and centered. And then we'll dive right in because we have a really interesting topic tonight. So, and you're amazing at it. You're actually a little too amazing at it because you've done tons of readings for me and they're like beyond spot on. And it's almost information you don't want to know because you're like, what? But that being said, we'll do our few breaths and we'll get right into it. So lovely just to clear out everything that doesn't belong, to get centered, to get grounded, to get present. I notice that time goes by so quickly when you are constantly thinking about the next moment, the next thing you have to do, the next place you have to be, the next item to cross up your to-do list. Makes the time go by so fast, but when you breathe and when you get grounded and when you're centered and you're present, you can really enjoy a much longer day. That is something that I happened to observe recently and wanted to share. So that being said, happy Wednesday night, everybody. Happy hump day. And happy mom in the house day, because Sheila Nee's is in the house. Ooh, ooh. I want like special effects, fireworks. No, but it's kind of unbelievable. Aside from her being my mother, she has a resume that would make someone vomit. There's so much on it. I don't think she could even, she probably is missing items because you've been in this game, this spiritual game, the metaphysical game before it was cool, before it was cutting edge. I think you are one of the first waivers. But how early would you say that all of this started with you? I mean, I want to hear a bit about your background. I know a bit about it, but I'm sure I'm going to discover more. But for the ladies and gentlemen listening at home, tell us a little bit about how this spirituality adventure started for you, and then how you became such a connoisseur. You're like a jack of all trades. You've studied a lot of different modalities. But I know that you started out as a nice Jewish girl from Long Island. So what happened there?
Well, I'll tell you. First, what I'll do is go into a little bit about my background, and then I'll go into more of how I specifically got involved with handwriting analysis.
Yes.
First of all, when I was young, I always saw auras, and I thought everybody saw them. I would see my teachers in front of the class, and whenever they got a bright idea, I would see some bright light flying at them. I would see their hands wave and light go off of them. I would see a halo around them. And
a halo around them. That must have, they must have been a really good teacher. One of the teachers you liked, maybe.
Well, whatever they were, I found out from a friend of mine. We were talking about, I guess, the teachers, and I said, "Oh my God, that teacher has such a bright light." And she's like, "What, in the classroom?" No, I said, "No, around her head." And I said, "Don't you see the bright lights around our teachers?" And I found out, no.
Oh, wow.
She did not. And then I found out that I guess I had a little extra talent that I had no idea other people didn't have.
How young were you at this revelation?
Probably about 10 years old.
Wow. So it was just something you casually saw and you thought everyone did. So it wasn't even worth talking about. It's like saying, "Hey, look, the sky's blue." It's like, wow, you're a genius.
Right.
The sky is blue.
So anyway, I guess I was always attracted to metaphysical information. If I went to a library, instead of getting a Nancy Drew book, which was
I remember Nancy.
I would want to read a book on numerology or tarot.
Wow.
You know, things of that nature. And basically what happened was the short version, actually.
I know.
I really wanted to learn more about metaphysics. But in the 70s, 80s, there really weren't a lot of places to go.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't call up some New Age school and say, "Hello, you know, I really want to take
Yeah, or
classes.
Pull up YouTube and
right.
just, right.
They didn't have it. So what I ended up doing is I ended up putting together psychic fairs, and I ran them for 16 years in the New York area.
Wow.
And I was very fortunate. I had some fabulous psychics, people who are famous, like...
Well, John Edward, you know.
From Crossing Over.
No big deal, Crossing Over with John Edward. Yeah, no, he's huge. You hired him. This was his first psychic job. So
right,
I'm using air
exactly,
quotes. But
right.
He was how old?
He was 16. And it was actually funny because John was a very mature person at a very young age. One of my psychics said to me, "You know what? There's a guy named John. He's really a great psychic." She said, "I think he's 17, maybe 18. He's a little young. But I think you should, you know, try him out at my psychic fairs." And it was funny because he actually put me in his book, and in the book he said he didn't think he did such a good job. He wondered why I ever hired him. And actually, years later, I went to a function that he was in, and we got to talk, and I explained to him that what I used to do is I used to have psychics come to me before a psychic fair, new psychics who never worked with me before, mm-hmm. and I would ask them to give me a five-minute reading. In those 5 minutes, I would myself, I guess, psychically feel if people had talent. I also knew they were very nervous, so I did not expect a fabulous reading, but I did want to get a feel for who the person was and how he would handle questions from people. Anyway, I actually thought he had talent, and the way I did it is I would have new psychics who never worked for me before actually work that day, and I would tell people who came in who didn't know which psychic they wanted to speak to, I would actually say, "Well, you know, we have this new guy, John, and he's really excellent. However, if you do not like his reading, come back to me, and I will give you to someone else because he's brand new. So please give me your opinion."
Right.
I remember the first day he worked for me was at Snug Harbor Cultural Center in Staten Island, New York. And he had 8 readings that day. And the bottom line every single person who went to him came back and said he was wonderful. So it was funny. He didn't think he did a good job with me, but the bottom line, he did. He was very impressive. And he actually, for many years, just did readings. He did not lecture at all. There was a person named Suzanne Northrup who worked for me, who also very well known. She's very well known in the Northeast, unbelievable psychic. And Suzanne used to lecture every time she worked at the fair. And after her lecture, she would go around the room and give messages from deceased relatives. I used to have to bring boxes of tissues every psychic fair, because she was so right on. People were crying. They were just emotionally hysterical. They couldn't believe she would be that specific. One day, John came to me and said, you know what? I think I can do that. And he was friendly with another psychic. And he said, can Shelley and I lecture and then go around the room and give readings? And I said, sure. So bottom line, he started lecturing. Unfortunately, Shelley passed away, so he ended up lecturing himself and doing that. He was seen by someone who ran a large organization and decided to promote him. And obviously, you know, he did really well. He's been on many TV shows.
John's incredible. We love John, and he's so kind to have given us tickets, you know, in whenever he comes to town nearby or whatever, we get to see him. But I'm curious, at what point did you, because you had your own metaphysical talk show on cable TV. Was that before or after the psychic fairs, or during, or?
During, okay.
During.
Now, you have to realize, we're talking about many years ago, we're talking in the early 1980s, really, when my fair started. And at that point in time, cable TV was just starting. And I had, I'm not sure if it was the first cable TV show talking about metaphysics, but if it wasn't the first, it was definitely one of the first.
I'm surprised they went for that.
Well, you know what? I guess they didn't really know, when I say they, but the cable TV stations really didn't know what they were doing, I think, at the time.
They were looking for content.
Right.
Okay.
They were looking for content. They were open-minded. So I used to actually invite my psychics to come on.
You kind of did what I'm doing right here.
And you know what? I tried to do something like this. I had someone who would be an experienced, let's say, astrologer with me, and then it would be myself, and I would be the lay person. I would ask our guest, who, let's say, was an astrologer, and I would ask the astrologer, you know, to tell me what does being a Taurus mean? You know, very basic question.
Right.
Whereas the other person with me would ask more advanced questions, like if this is trining that and that is trining this, and what does that mean? Because I wanted to have the show really go out to people of all levels. I wanted to be appreciated like that.
I love that. I'm very similar to that. There's all levels of awakening happening, and I want to be able to deliver something for everyone. So I think that's a beautiful thing. But is this show your idea that you pitched to cable TV? I mean, they didn't have this idea. Yeah.
Yes, I did.
Well, dang, shoot, let's bring some of that back.
And I did it actually for 4 years.
Wow.
And that was in the 80s. And then my schedule got to be too busy, because my goal was actually education. Again, I was trying to find out where I could go to actually learn about tarot cards, numerology, metaphysics, psychic development, etc.
Yeah.
And because there weren't places, I decided my focus was going to be education. And I actually started a school called Psychic Seminar, where my psychics would actually have classes that went on usually once a week at their homes. And mm-hmm. people would come and learn. And that was my goal. So that's why my show stopped on TV, because my goal was then obviously offering education.
Mm.
So that's
how you received your education for more or less for the better part,
exactly.
Correct? You that's brilliant, guys.
I mean, if you want to learn something, there is a school,
start your own school.
And take the classes. that's really what I did.
I know you read tarot, I know you see auras. I know you do amazing graphology, handwriting analysis. Did you have a favorite that you were experimenting with back then, or were you just open to everything? You even did some kind of I'm forgetting the term exactly. Oh, Silva mind control.
Right, exactly.
Which,
what it is.
That sounds a little scary.
Okay, I took classes with a company called Silva Mind Control. And basically...
no, mind control.
Mind control.
A little freaky.
There was a person named Jose Silva who decided that there were too many people out there in the world who didn't understand metaphysics and how people could have ESD. And so he actually scientifically looked into it and used what they call a biofeedback machine, which actually measured your brain waves and found out that when you're in a pre-sleep condition, then your mind sends and receives brain waves a lot further. So what he did was put together classes to where people could get into that state of mind and become more psychic. So I'm a graduate of his program.
Wow. Would you credit that to really your psychic heightening abilities? You've all these abilities. I know your mom had them as well, even though she wouldn't admit that she... Oh, everybody knows that, you know. But would you credit that practice to really what sharpened your
skills? Definitely helped me, because I will say that they did talk about auras. Finally, they talked about auras in the classes that I took. The one thing that I didn't know was auras came in colors, because I guess when I saw someone, I didn't really see a color. I just saw energy around them, sort of like a halo. So then when I heard that they come in colors, I decided to start looking for the colors. And years ago with television, they used to have this peacock that had bright colors. And that was the symbol of one of the...
Well, NBC, right? I think it was NBC.
It could be, no? NBC. I don't even remember, but I do remember the peacock. It had bright colors. So I thought I was supposed to be seeing bright red, bright yellow, et cetera. I didn't, but I started seeing pale colors around people. And so that definitely helped my abilities, because, again, it showed me a little bit more.
Yeah. And I would say that state, that pre-falling asleep state, is personally where I go in meditation. That's what it feels like to me. That's the sensation it gives. So that's interesting. I don't know if you have that, if you've experienced that in your own meditation practices, but it feels like that kind of whimsical half here, half not.
Right.
Sort
yes,
of feeling. So
exactly.
it goes right in line with the Silva mind control. I want to rethink that title. No.
I know, it's funny. So what I ended up doing after I had 16 years of running psychic fairs in the New York area, that was the time when 900 psychic lines started. And I was very fortunate, because there was a company called Body, Mind, and Spirit Magazine who wanted to start running 900 psychic lines, and they wanted someone who had experience with psychics. Well, it's not such a everyday kind of thing.
No.
So they actually announced in many papers, we're looking for a psychic manager, you know, someone who's done that before.
Wow.
And, they were located in Rhode Island, and they flew down to meet me. At that time, I was living in Florida, hired me, and I ended up managing psychic lines. Mm-hmm. In fact, I guess that, you know, unfortunately, psychic lines were coming and going at the time because they didn't really know much about them. So,
yeah, and then I think, you know, once it caught on, there was some, there was the greed factor, and people went and started psychic lines and businesses with people that really weren't qualified to do that. And it gave
exactly.
it, yeah, it gave it a bad name. But I know personally that, you know, any call you were taking, they were getting a real psychic on the other end of the line. So
it was, right, exactly. So in other words, I went on into working for, basically at the American Psychic Network, Psychic Discovery Network, Crystal Psychics, 1-800-PREDICT, you know, things like
call
that.
Me now for your free reading.
But anyway,
well,
yes.
Yeah, so I want to talk handwriting, because like I said, people, she's got a lot on her. She's done a lot. We're not even touching on Pan Am, which she worked for, and I know you would purposefully look for auras before getting on a flight,
yes,
to ensure that you would arrive safely.
Right, exactly. For people out there who are familiar with Edgar Cayce, he mentioned that before people die, their aura leads them.
Wow.
So I worked for Pan Am while I was running these psychic fairs. And when people came on board, the first thing I did was look for their aura. And then I stayed on the plane. And fortunately, I always saw auras, so that was good. I don't even know what I would have done if I
right?
didn't see auras. I didn't know if I would have ran out of the plane.
Yeah.
But bottom line, it made me comfortable
yeah.
seeing that.
That's so cool. Well, so the handwriting analysis, you studied, that was something that you were curious about at a young age, it sounds like, because you noticed that there was so much personality in each handwriting. It was very different. There were a lot of embellishments and flourishments, and I guess that curiosity then led you to your teacher, Connie Coleman. So tell us a little bit about that. So how did all of the handwriting analysis start for you, and where are you now with that?
Okay. Well, first of all, I was around age 10 when I was in a grocery store online. Of course, we're talking about New York. There were always lines in grocery stores, you know, as many places are. And I guess nowadays people may be looking at People magazine or, you know, picking up a copy of that or the National Enquirer. I don't know if that's still
I don't know.
Going. But anyway, in those days, they used to have what they called little Dell books, D-E-L-L. And they were small little booklets that were by the, you know, cash register. So when you're bored, you know, people pick that up and flip through.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw one that was on handwriting analysis. And I started reading a page or two, and I said, wow, this is so interesting. So I actually bought the book, and from there, I bought another book and another book.
The book was probably like a nickel back then.
It probably was. It was probably about a nickel. So I read book after book after book, and then I was really passionate about doing handwritings. And so I would look at my friend's handwriting and say, oh, my God, look at this. And they were fascinated because a lot of times I would pick up things that they knew that I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it got to be a situation, actually. I remember one Christmas where a lot of my friends said, I'm not signing anything on your Christmas card because I'm afraid you're going to see something in there.
Wow.
And some of them actually typed Christmas cards, because in those days
they
didn't have computers and you could just put a card in a typewriter.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was
Or you
funny.
Get like serial killer Christmas cards where they like chop the letters out of the magazine.
I know. So what happened was I ended up really being interested in it, finding out there was so much psychology behind handwriting analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the 70s, I was really fortunate. I was living in Dallas, Texas at the time, and there was a person named Connie Coleman Gilmore, who was considered the number one graphologist in the United States.
Wow.
She had moved from Camden, Ohio to Dallas, Texas, because she was so famous in Camden that she said that she had no privacy. She would go out to a restaurant, and people would say, Connie, can you do my handwriting?
Wow.
So what it is she was sort of hiding out in Dallas, and she had advertised that she wanted to teach lessons. She worked for IGAS, which is the International Graphology Society. And basically, I found out from her that not only could I find personality traits in handwriting, but you could tell pregnancy in handwriting. You could tell if somebody's suicidal in handwriting. You could tell diseases in handwriting. So from that really opened up another can of worms, you might say.
Yeah.
And basically, I was collecting handwriting. Everybody I saw, you know, trying to find out if they had any disease, anything. And then I started, learning from that.
Wow.
And found out that when I did handwriting analysis, it sort of talked to me.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, even though I did numerology and tarot cards and other things, the handwriting really spoke to me.
Wow.
So it was more of a tool. What I also found out about handwriting analysis, which I was really amazed about, was if you change your handwriting, you can change who you are. It's therapeutic.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that when you write, you don't realize it, but your brain is writing.
Mm-hmm.
They've done studies on people who were amputees, actually, who lost their hands and actually used a pen and wrote with their feet. And the style of writing that they had previous to that matched exactly the way they wrote now. It was amazing, but again, it's your brain writing, and so...
That leads me to the question of, because people are always saying, oh, well, this, you know, I was writing really quickly, or, oh, let me, because I've asked friends for handwriting to give to you, and they're always like, oh, well, this doesn't really represent what it usually looks like. What would you say to that? Because, again, you're saying we write more from the mind, from the brain, from a subconscious place, rather than a conscious place. So I've heard you say that it really doesn't matter how chickens scratch or whatever it is. There's still that common thread that shows up. Is that?
That's very true. People look at handwriting from a different vantage point. In other words, when you give a handwriting example, when I say you, but people in general, when they give handwriting samples, they think, oh, it has to be neat. And if they are not as neat this time, it says something.
Yeah, let me
different.
Do it. No, this isn't good. Let me do it over again. I don't like this one.
Exactly. So, but actually, it says the same thing. It's just that I'm looking at it from a very different vantage point.
Interesting. That is so cool. So I know. Okay. So I want to give people something that they can do today. If y'all want to get a piece of paper out,
okay.
And I know your favorite way to do this is I am giving you a sample of my handwriting. That's what you would write. And then sign it, whatever that means to you. And I always get people saying, well, sign it. You want my first name, my last name, whatever is natural to you. And then you sign it. Okay. So now we're looking at the handwriting.
Okay.
Now, what are some of the most, well, first of all, let's go over why it's helpful to have it on an unlined sheet of paper.
Okay, fine. So in other words, what Shauna was saying is if you want to look at your own handwriting now, get a blank piece of paper and write on it, I am giving you a sample of my handwriting, and then sign your name. Now, the reason why a blank piece of paper is good, because when people write on lined paper, first of all, sometimes it's college ruled lines that are closer together, and then sometimes it's on like a wide
ruled, right?
And when you write on a blank piece of paper, you're writing with your style alone without any size affecting it,
right?
Because size is important.
Size matters.
And I'll give you a, for instance, about size, because, let me give you some specifics about handwriting that I feel really match psychology, because it really just follows suit. For instance, if someone has large handwriting, they see things in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say they want to throw a party, it will be a big party. They are usually gregarious.
Mm-hmm.
They do things, again, big. They'll have 50 platters of food there.
Mm-hmm.
Many actors and actresses, because they have big personalities, usually have long writing.
Yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off, but would you also say that larger handwriting equals a stronger level of communication or a desire to communicate? Does that tie in at all or not so much with the size?
Well, you know what? With handwriting, many times there are different traits that you can see in various places in the handwriting. So I would look at a few different things before I would really give an analysis of something. But with what you're saying, it turns out people, again, generally with large personalities would follow suit with what you said.
Mm-hmm.
However, I would look for extensions and other things, which I'll get into in a minute.
Okay.
I will tell you also that if people have small writing, a lot of times it shows that, you know, they're happier with a small group of people around. They wouldn't have a party with 100 people. They would have a party with, let's say, 10 of their closest friends.
Mm-hmm.
People who have small handwriting sometimes are a little shyer. Again, they don't want to really take any attention away from anything. So
mm-hmm.
therefore, on a paper as well, mm-hmm. they don't take up much space. So again, that's just a basic thing.
Yeah. And what about, I know that, so when you don't have a lined paper, that leaves you room to flow however you want in writing it. Now, I know that there is something to whether your handwriting starts to then tilt up, or is your handwriting tilting down, or is it all over the place?
So let me tell you a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, I'm just going to give you a little thing that happened to me once. I had a friend who moved out of town. I was living in New York at the time, and she moved to another state. And she wrote me a note, and the note was where basically her handwriting started in the upper left-hand corner and kept on angling down, down, down.
Mm.
And that shows depression.
Mm.
But what was she saying? Well, Sheila, I'm having such a wonderful time. I have to realize she was lying through the whole thing. So she tells me how much of a great time she's having, how much she loves her new boyfriend, how much everything's marvelous and wonderful. And it was going down, down, down.
Wow.
Whenever you start with your handwriting on the upside going down, that means, unfortunately, you are depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Things are going downhill. So I wrote her back. And I said, listen, this is me. You know I analyze handwriting. And I see you're absolutely miserable, so tell me the truth. And she called me up and she told me I was absolutely right. She was trying so hard. She made a mistake. She moved in with some guy. She thought it would be great, and it was horrible, and bottom line.
That's incredible. See, that's something right away you can look at and pay attention to. And so then you would, for lack of a better term, prescribe that someone maybe starts to write a little straighter. Or,
okay, so right? let me get into that.
I know there's so much to get into. Yeah.
Okay. So
we're in it now. We're in it. I'm getting
exactly.
My game face on. Hang on. Let me get my stance here.
So people who are depressed will write in a downward angle. People who are optimistic will write upwards. You know, it's almost, think of the upper part of a piece of paper is the sky and the lower is the earth.
Mm.
So people who write up towards the sky are usually spiritual and optimistic.
Sky's the limit.
Sky's the limit.
Right.
Now, for what Shauna is talking about now is something a little different. And what it's called is graphotherapeutics. And the reason why she's asking me about how you can change your handwriting is because I actually let's see, suggested to her years ago that
this is what you get for having your mom on the show. She's selling me down the river. No.
It's true,
and I wanted to bring this up because it's valid. So please continue.
Right. I would like to teach people some things about handwriting. Again, as I found out, because your brain is writing and you don't even, your subconscious writing, you don't really know how tough it is to change your handwriting. But if you change your handwriting, then you can change who you are as a person. Mm-hmm. So with Shauna, and for everyone who knows her, she's a fabulous, wonderful person, but I looked at her capital I. Now, you have to realize that the capital I is such an important part of your handwriting because that's who you are. That's what you think about yourself. It is so important that there's actually a book out there that the whole entire book is called You and Your Capital I. It focuses exactly on that.
Wow.
And when you write, I am giving you a sample of your handwriting. Your capital I should be at least twice the height of the M. Okay.
Right.
So the tall letters are, you know, again, obviously, the I, and then B's are into the taller letters.
Right, when you sign your name, you capitalize things, in other words.
The middle letters are called the mundane letters. So in other words, a capital I should always be at least twice the height of the mundane letters, which are, A, E, I, O, U. They're, mm-hmm. they're sitting right in the middle of your page, mm-hmm. Of your sentence. So basically, Shauna would have such a small I that I said, oh my God, that unfortunately shows insecurity. And I know that you have so much that you can offer this world. You're not offering it because your capital I is small. So I actually had her practice and make her capital I bigger. And here she is.
Here I am with my own radio. So
it
didn't work at all. No, I really did that. I made a conscious effort to make a bigger I. And it was funny. I felt an essence of a stronger, more independent. It felt very empowering to write the I because I really felt it as it's the great I am. We always talk about that too. I am, that is a power's place to be. So as I worked on the I, it changed me.
Well, and it's funny, and for you out there who have friends who have big egos, if they have big capital I's, make them write them a little bit smaller.
And the,
knock them down to size a little bit, for sure.
And the I also carries something about the mother and father. Is that true?
Yes, it's very interesting. The capital I really not only shows what you think about yourself, it actually shows the relationship you have to your mother, to your father. Even it can show family connections as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a really powerful, probably the most powerful letter of all. And I want to tell everybody that a lot of people think the signature really shows something about a person, but the signature is actually what that person wants other people to think about them. That's their show. Mm-hmm. In other words, people will write a certain way and then they'll show completely different handwriting. And bottom line, these are people who are putting on a front.
Mm.
And so the capital I is really what the person thinks about themselves. And their signature, again, is what they want other people to think they are.
Okay. And and I know that ties into the family as well. If they are more private or open about their family, would usually, go to the last name.
So let me tell you a little trick about that.
Yeah.
The signature is very interesting. Let's say
there's the infamous doctor signature too, always okay. Which is scribble.
Which is scribble, right? Yeah. I will tell you this. If a female is not married and she writes her name, her last name is her connection to the family and what she thinks of the family. Her first name is about herself. So some people, if you look at their handwriting, if you see that their first name is very clear and big, but their last name is small or scribbled out a little bit where you can't figure out who it is, what it is basically they are not that proud of their family. There's a problem with that family. If, however, someone writes their first name smaller and their last name larger, then actually this is someone who's really proud of their family. In fact, they're more proud of them, their family, than themselves.
Mm. So maybe their identity is more tied into who their family, say the Hiltons or something, they would be, you know, it's tied into that last name as opposed to their first name, their personal identity.
Yes. And this is interesting. If, let's see, I know when I started learning handwriting analysis, I used to have friends, I used to tell them bits and pieces, and then we'd go around, look at people's handwriting. But this is a little tidbit for people who are married. Let's say, you know, someone who's married, if you want to find out what relationship they're having with their husband, if they write their first name far away from their second name, their married name, they're not that connected. They're unfortunately not in great shape. The further away the first name is from the last name, again, this is from married people, from a married female, then that relationship is really not that good.
Not very connected, right?
Right.
And I know it's in addition to a last name that's more illegible, that can also mean, I mean, that can mean issues, but that can also mean a more protective or a private
stance. Right. Let's see, for signatures and for a lot of information, really, I could take hours going over things, but I'm just
giving you a little, this is so fun.
I'll give you a little tidbits. First of all, you have to realize that if someone has very clear handwriting, however, their signature, you have no idea what they're saying, which is typically what you're saying,
the doctor's
signature. What it really is these are people who want to communicate clearly about ideas, but they're very private about themselves. Mm. So they're giving you, you know, something that they want you to know. As far as in general, they want you to know things about the world or facts, but when it comes to their signature, they don't want you to know anything about their private life.
Right.
So that's what that's about.
Okay.
I know a lot of people also will write their name and they'll put, squiggles underneath it and, you know, all sorts of things. And they're trying to show people that they're very self-reliant. But if I see something like that and see a small eye, I know that obviously it's show.
Right, right. And I want, so to just jump, since we're on the family thing, I want to jump to the eye. And I remember learning from you something in regard to whether there's a curl towards the bottom of the eye or versus the top, right? Like there's the father represents the top and the mother the bottom or vice versa.
Okay, now let me clarify that for people who are looking at their handwriting right now.
Right, this is when it's tough to be radio and not a visual entity. So
I will start like this. If someone is looking at their handwriting and if they have the standard, what I call cursive handwriting that was taught in school, you will know that the capital I in cursive starts from the bottom, goes up in a circle, comes to the left, and then goes back to the main part of the I. Mm-hmm. I hope people follow that, but what Shauna is talking about is your mother, let's see, your connection with your mother is represented by the first loop that you make, the second loop that goes out to the left and comes back to the main part of the capital I is a representation of your father. Now, if your parents really were very well connected, then actually your both of your loops would be about even. It would show equal mother influence and equal father influence. If there's a connection on the main part of the eye, again, that shows a nice connection. However, if there is a situation where the first loop is really big and the other, let's see, loop to the left basically doesn't have even a loop on it or whatever, it shows more mother influence than father influence. It shows they were very different people.
Okay.
So again, it's hard to explain some of
No, this. I know, because a lot of this is something that you intuit at this point. So it's something, I've if you've ever have a chance to work with Sheila, I see you go into this trance almost where you your fingers start going and you move into the energy of a person's handwriting. So I know it's more than what we can really explain in X, Y, and Z terms here, but I wanted to touch on that because I found that really interesting. And also the lowercase dotted eyes where the dot ends up above your eye, whether it be towards the front, the middle, or the back, that shows.
Okay, well, everything in handwriting is very telling. And what Shauna is trying to explain is, let's say you write the smaller case I, and obviously there's a dot that goes on top of it. Well, if you put a dot directly on top of it, then usually you are on top of things. You do things in a timely manner. If you dot the I, behind the I, or should I say to the left of the I, that means you're usually a little bit of a procrastinator. If you make your dot to the right of the I, that usually means you're an adventurous person, maybe ahead of the game. There are people who will do little circles for I's. Those are people who either want attention or they're very creative. They're a little different. They have their own style. And again, I'd have to look at the rest of the handwriting to be able to really say more. I can tell you that also with T crossings, where you put that bar on the T, the crossing bar will show you a lot. People who have high ideals and look forward to the future usually cross the T bar close to the top. People who are living more from day to day, you know what, they can't get that T bar up high. They're doing low, and again, they're living from day to day. I will tell you this, in my dating years ago,
cover your ears, Dad.
What I used to do is I used to look at people's handwriting for a couple of things. One was an I dot and one was for a T crossing. And this is what I was looking for. People who have really bad tempers, a lot of these people are in jail. If they have very thick T crossings or a very thick I dot, unfortunately, these are people who can't control their emotions.
Wow.
And
now, when you said you said thick, was that the word you used? I know, because I know that is depending on how there's a level of intensity that's conveyed when someone really pushes deeper into the piece of paper. It's like a Braille. Are you talking about
I know there's so many things.
We have about 10 minutes left. I'm just putting, I know it flies by. You just see the face she just gave me. That was a face for radio. I know it flies by. So,
let me tell you this. Okay. think of your, let's see, the depth of how you write on a piece of paper is the depth of your feelings. Because if you write on paper and it's your handwriting really indents into the page, that means you are affected deeply by things.
Okay.
And if someone has thick handwriting for a T crossing or an I dot, but the rest of their handwriting is mediocre. In other words,
okay,
it doesn't feel like Braille if you,
pick up the paper, right?
When you pick up the paper, this shows that they have a tough time controlling their temper.
Okay, so that's the difference there.
Right, that's the difference. So you were thinking of what I used to teach you about the thickness or how heavy someone would write on the page. And so if someone, let's see, is consistent with everything being the same depth onto the page, then that's okay. But if you see someone having handwriting that, you know, it's, you know, you can feel a little bit on the back of the page. It isn't totally like Braille, but their I dots and their T crossings, however, are very thick and like Braille. Unfortunately, these are people to watch out for.
Oh, wow. We should get some of these prison letters and just start.
You could also tell schizophrenia in handwriting. I don't know if you want to call it bipolar these days or whatever, but people who write with their handwriting not angled at, let's see, in the same direction all the time. If there's, if you start out to the left in a word and then the next letter is to the right and the next letter is in between, and, you know, again, slant is very important, but if you look at someone's handwriting and every letter is slanted in different direction, that shows bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, et cetera. There's so much in handwriting, it's unbelievable. You can even tell cancer, and this I thought was so incredible. Now, I'm not a doctor, and obviously I cannot diagnose people as far as cancer is concerned, but I do know theoretically how it looks like in handwriting. There is a book that I'm so thrilled you can now get, because for about 10 years it was not obtainable. And it's called You Are What You Write. It's by a person named Huntington Hartford. And Huntington Hartford, for, let's see, people who are older, actually was an entrepreneur. He was one of the wealthiest men in the world. His father opened A&P, which I think is Asian and Pacific Tea Company. It was the largest supermarket chain in the world. And so bottom line, he had a lot of money. He had a real affinity to handwriting, and he actually studied it a lot, found out you can tell cancer in handwriting. And in that book, You Are What You Write, and you can get it on Amazon, it actually will show you exactly what it looks like in handwriting. So he thought, this is wonderful. I'm going to go to doctors. I'm going to show them this. They're going to be so thrilled. People will be thrilled. They don't have to get any horrible tests. We just look at their handwriting, and that's painless. And, you know, you can tell, you know, there's a problem there. But he went to doctors, and they didn't, they weren't interested in that information. They, you know, they're doctors. They, first of all, they think this is a pseudoscience, number one. But number two, of course, they lose money. So after years of going around to different people, he finally found that there was a company who really wanted that information. And you know what that company was? It was an insurance company that covered health insurance. And they decided, wow, this is great. If we could tell, if we have people fill out the forms and we could tell that
illness,
they're having cancer, we're not going to cover this.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
So
wow,
that's what he found out. It was really very, very sad. So, again, you are what you write.
Is that something that then someone could say they had that cancer or they had an illness? Do you feel that if they were to work on that handwriting, would that be therapeutic? I know that's intense, but
I don't know.
I'm sure not that on its own.
I've never had that situation, but mm-hmm. I will tell you one situation I had. I had a friend who once had cancer, and she, let's see, she had sent me her handwriting, and she said, "I believe I have cancer. Do I?" Because she was a friend, I said, "Well, definitely go to a doctor." She knew what that meant.
Yeah.
You know, again, I can't prescribe anything. However, she said years later, "I have a friend who hasn't been feeling well. She's a doctor who hates doctors. She won't go to a doctor, but can you look at her handwriting?" I looked at her handwriting and I said to my friend, "I mean, I hate to say it, but I see cancer, you know, here." And so I told her to tell her friend, the doctor, to go to a doctor. And her friend found out she had 3 types of cancer.
Oh, my gosh.
But she was very lucky because it was caught in time. And boom, so.
That's a great note, because the beauty is it sounds like you can see signs of it before it's even really fully manifested in you. So maybe that's a way that someone can be proactive. If there
right,
are
exactly.
signs of, right. So if there are signs of it, hey, it may not be there yet, but let's do something to energetically shift things here and make
right,
sure.
Exactly.
That, yeah. And I just want to, my gosh, the time just flies, but I want to mention something else too, because this is something that I worked on personally, was numbers. Okay. When writing numbers, I remember being proactive in changing, you can do like a really harsh 2, you know what I'm saying? You do like the curl and then a line. That used to be my 2. And then it was like my relationship with finances and money changed the moment that my 8s and my 2s and my those types of numbers became more fluid. Is there truth to that?
Yes. In general, I will tell you this, that in handwriting that is more angular without loops, it usually is a mind that shows sharpness, aggressiveness. They're usually very good with numbers,
mm-hmm.
and that definitely helps. People who write more in a rounded way, they're usually more peaceful, gentle. They're not as an aggressive corporate type.
Right. But does it have a direct effect on your relationship with finances? Because I personally felt that once I changed that, I felt more relaxed with finances, like a flow of money coming, as opposed to like really holding on to my pennies and coins.
Well, if you started writing more in an angular way, you would have had more of a connection with corporate, which is money.
Mm.
So that would definitely have helped.
Okay, so as I curled the numbers, that did anything? Did it do anything? Am I winning a million?
You had more of a loving, affection.
Right, more fluid life. Affection
right.
towards money.
Exactly.
And if you love, you know, if you whatever you love, you bring in. And so, you know, the world that we live in right now is based on finances. So I know a lot of people are anti-money, but I feel like we have to, if that's something that's going around now, that's the way that we have abundance in our lives. We need to really love that. That is something to shift. So, wow, with just a minute here, I'm going to pull out. Sheila actually pulled this card, and I think it's so lovely. We have Saint Germain this week. Work your magic. You have the power to resolve the situation you are inquiring about. This card signifies your untapped magical abilities, which you've used successfully in the past. Pull these abilities out of storage and use them to work your magic now. Your clear and focused intentions, positive expectations, prayers, decrees, and action steps all create the healings and manifestations you desire. So, Sheila Meets, aka Mom, I want to thank you so much. We have our radio yelling at us, 60 seconds. I wish you could hear this. But at least she's British, so it's very lovely as she rushes me off of the microphone. But I want to thank you so much for being here. This was so much fun. And this card is beautiful. I really feel that it has something to do with you working your magic, because she feels like she's been in the spiritual closet for a little bit now. You know, you went and you raised a family, you did other things, but
I
now
know, became corporate.
You became corporate. But now Saint Germain is telling you and telling all of us to get out of the spiritual closet and to come forth with your gifts and share them, because it uplifts not only you, but everyone around you who is touched by it. So Mom, Sheila, sorry, I'm not Sheila, Sheila Neese, thank you so much for being here tonight. And where can people find out more about you?
HolisticHandwriting.com.
HolisticHandwriting.com. Beautiful. All right, my beloveds across the planet, we will see you next week. Thank you so much for listening to Heart on Radio, and have a beautiful week.